it's crazy how fast social media moves. And I think if you're not kind of constantly on it and picking up on what the trends are and what other people are doing, you get left behind, and that's really scary.
We're on a mission. We're going to find and uncover the smartest, most successful entrepreneurs on the planet, explore their highs, their lows, and how they ultimately mastered the game. I'm Martin Cook, and I'm excited to welcome you to the Smarter Destiny podcast. I'm grateful for you and your time. Now let's level up together. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Smarter Destiny podcast, where this time we have my friend Hannah Chapman on the show. Hannah is the founder and co-director of Ava May Aromas. They are a luxury home fragrance brand that creates designer scents at affordable prices that you could use to make your house smell amazing and recognizable as well, and we'll get into that. Basically, she's out there crushing it, particularly in the world of social media, Instagram, influencers, things like that. We're going to get into that, but anyone in the UK probably has heard of Mrs. Finch, who is a big part, actually, of Hannah's brand and its growth. So, what about Ava May? So Ava May is a mid-seven-figure brand, crushing it, as I said, online in the home smells industry. It's donated close to £50,000 to charities, and it's just 3 years old, by the way. They did 0-7 figures in their first year, so they exploded onto the scene with a bang. And Hannah herself has been interviewed for major publications such as BBC, Sky News, Daily Mirror, and a whole bunch of those amazing places. So without further ado, let's welcome her to the stage. Hannah, how's it going?
Hi, yeah, really good, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing good, thank you. Whereabouts in the world are you right now for the listeners?
I am currently in sunny Yorkshire. That's sarcastic, by the way. It's not sunny at all. It's rained every day for like the last week. But yeah, I'm in Yorkshire, specifically South Yorkshire in Doncaster area, if anyone knows that. So
beautiful. Definitely got family in Yorkshire, and very familiar with the weather. I think drizzle for a week is pretty much Yorkshire sun, certainly at this time of year. So yeah.
We wait until 2022 now before I see the sun again. So
there you go. So the way we like to kick things off on this show is we like to go back. We go back to a point in your past that serves as your origin story, when you got bitten by the entrepreneurial bug. Something happened, a life event, some kind of conflict, some kind of drama, probably. If you've got a time in mind, could you take us back to that time and tell us all about it?
Yeah, I've got two points. There's two points in my head that I think probably really define what's led me to where I am now, if that makes sense. So the first point goes back quite a few years now. It's making me feel really old. I think I was about... I must have been about 16, 17. And I went round to my friend's house. So I have to credit her. And it's actually her younger sister. She's one of those people that was born an entrepreneur, if that makes sense. I don't know. It's her younger sister. And just right from a young age, she was always doing cake sales. She was always finding ways to make money. It was quite inspirational and had quite a big impact on me. And I remember going around to my friend's house one night, and her sister was sat in the living room. We were watching telly, or me and my friend were watching telly. And she was sat there with a pile of envelopes next to her, and she was just packing orders. And bear in mind, she must have been about 14 at this point, like really young to be doing that. And I was like, what are you doing, Lizzie? Like, what? I don't understand. And she was like, oh, I'm just packing orders. I was like, from what? And she basically set up an Etsy shop at that age and was selling earrings. She was making earrings and selling them, and she was just packaging out all her orders. And I just remember it really... of so clearly like resonating with me. I was like, oh my gosh, she's sat there making money. You know, she's got that extra income. I say extra income, like she had a full-time job, or she was at school at this point. But it just really resonated with me that I think that was just such a dawning point where it was like, you can use your free time to make more money. You know, you can be, even just, she was watching TV with us, but she was at the same time doing something. And I just remember that impacting me at that age. Like, that was such a point where I was like, oh, I really want to do that. I don't know what I want to do. I don't know how I'm going to do it. But I just remember being so inspired by her and being like, wow, like so many people sit there, waste their time watching telly. Not, don't get me wrong, I watch TV all the time, but you do know what I mean? That like, you can do these things, or you can choose to use that time and do something else with it. So it just, that really, really impacted me. then I must have forgotten about it and went on for a few years and like went to uni, did the uni thing. And then the second point, the second sort of shift for me was I never forgot that. It was always at the back of my head. And came out of uni, graduated, got a job in marketing at a marketing agency, and just kind of did it because it was the first thing I could get onto as a stepping stone, I guess. I had to get a job when I got out of school with that debt around my neck. And I had had the idea of like candles and, you know, that what Ava May has become now. I kind of had that idea in the back of my head from being on social media so much and seeing other people doing it. And I remember it kind of triggered that memory of Lizzie being in the living room and whatever. And I remember thinking, people are doing this at home. Like there's just nothing stopping me from doing this. You know, I could make this, create a profile, put it out there. And I remember sort of being a bit like, why am I not doing it? But it took me a good 8 months sat with the idea before I did it. And the trigger point again was when I decided to quit that job. I just had enough for various reasons, mainly being poorly treated, but that was a good lesson for future as well, with hindsight. And yeah, I just remember the day I quit. I remember it so clearly and just feeling like this huge weight had been lifted. And kind of thinking, do you know what? I've got this opportunity now to do this, and I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to go for it and see where it takes me. So yeah, those are kind of my origin stories of that entrepreneurial concept or spark. Was very much Lizzie in her living room at 14 and then quitting my job and having seen other people doing it and seeing how they were using social media to do it and realizing that there really was no barrier. It's only your own head. And I remember walking away from that job like, right, I've got to do this now. So yeah,
that's yeah, it's quite incredible. The seed being sown and then just that it sort of percolating in the background for a little while, switching analogies, percolating in the background for a little while, and then just finally that quitting the job and then almost having that fear or hunger that you might get from, oh shit, I'm jobless right now. Yeah. Unless I figure something out. So when you took action, what did that look like? How did you actually start? Can you tell us about that sort of early period?
Yeah, definitely. I remember that really clearly, actually, because I remember that exact thought going through my head of, A, I have not got a job. So now if I don't actually take action, I'm not going to have any income. So I really need to do this. And I remember being a bit like, where do I start? Like, how do you know what to do to set up a company? I almost feel like this is the kind of thing that they should teach in school. You know, like they do say this, don't they, that people aren't really taught good, like just things that you should be, you know, banking and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, so the first thing I did was my website, because that was something that I'd learned at the agency that I'd been working at. I was like, right, okay, I can at least start with that. I need to come up with a name. So I came up with Ava May Aromas, which is my grandma's names combined. And yeah, there was a whole story behind that. But I got a name, registered my domain, and had the basic skills to create a very, very basic website. I'm no website master by any means, but I knew how to do that, which was an advantage and definitely a skill that I'd learned. And also the social handles. So I got all my social handles and I was like, right, okay. There's kind of, you know, I felt like I was at a starting point where I was like, there's nothing actually stopping me posting on social media. And I remember being like, I don't know what to do. But just taking some photos with my iPhone and putting them out there and sort of seeing if I got any response or whatever. And that was it. That was the starting point. And then I did all the official things that you probably should have done in the first place, like company's house and all that kind of stuff. But I didn't know that at the time. So yeah, my starting point was the social handles and the website and getting that all set up and registered. But I think
what about from the product side?
Product side, similar thing. Like honestly, Google and like how to make a candle. It's true though, is that everyone starts somewhere. I think a lot, you know, when people come up with new ideas, there's always this fear. And even now, even with where I'm at the moment and looking into, you know, I know we'll come on to this later, but you know, trying to start a second venture and move on to a second project, I still get the fear sometimes where I'm like, God, I'm not an expert. But I think I forget, I wasn't an expert when I started candles. I mean, it was literally Google. My now partner's website, going to supplies for candles and, you know, and looking up YouTube was such a great resource, YouTube videos and learning off that and practicing. And and yeah, just buying all the raw materials and going, right, okay, I need a jar. Okay, I need wax, I need wicks, I need fragrance oil, and learning as many tips and tricks as I could, and just making and making and making, and it went very, very wrong a lot of the time. But you do slowly get better, don't you? You pick up your tips and tricks and you start to figure out your own ways of doing things. And eventually I was confident enough that the candles I had were okay to go on the website that I built and to sell. So yeah, it just started out with that. It started out with just candles. And then it expanded, you know, product range expanded over time. And that was it. It was just, it's just, the internet's an amazing resource. I'm a massive believer that, is it Elon Musk that said you can learn anything if you really want to? Like, it's all on YouTube, really, isn't it? It's free.
I don't think there's an information problem nowadays. It's a filtering of information. Once upon a time, you know, the book that you needed was only in a handful of libraries and you'd have to travel a long way to get the book. We're not at that stage now. The information's everywhere. It's actually filtering it. So you've got your first rudimental candles, you've got your website and the ability to sell it, and you've got your social handles. How did you first go about actually spreading the word, getting your early customers?
Yeah, and you know what? I remember my very first order when it came through, and I remember having to check that it wasn't like a friend or a family member of, you know, trying to be nice and support me. And when I realized, oh my gosh, this is actually a genuine customer. I don't know this person. I don't know who they are. I remember the pride I felt that I'd obviously created something that someone would buy from. How did I go about it? I mean, literally, so, you know, kind of losing that fear with socials and just posting stuff and just figuring out what worked. Cause I feel like a lot of people have this fear. I'm a big fan of Gary Vaynerchuk, or Gary V as he's known, and his attitude of, you know, you've got to start somewhere and just start posting and get content out there rather than holding it back because you're scared of what people might think. So I was posting every day, twice a day, three times a day, just putting up videos and following lots of people, reaching out to people, kind of just being really confident and saying, hi, you know, would you be interested in trying my candles and stuff? Just DMing. I had like a copy and paste message and I was just messaging all sorts of people, probably the wrong people at times, but I just went for it. I just had this real attitude of, I've got nothing to lose, because I really didn't at that point. I didn't have a big following or a big brand. So it was like, why not? Making my website look good, trying to get my photos to look semi-professional on my iPhone, and like and it started to pick up. And the more time that I was spending on social, I was taking a lot of inspiration from other people that were doing it too, other brands in the same industry, in the home fragrance market, and looking at what are they doing that's kind of working, how have they built their pages. And it was really apparent to me quite quickly that, you know, this influencers, the power of influencers was obviously a huge thing, and that was really apparent to me really early on. So I just started copying and pasting and DMing all these home accounts, interiors accounts, anyone that I thought was relevant, and saying, hey, in return for free product, would you be interested in sort of sharing my brand to your page? And again, that was a massive part of kind of how I started to get my page out there. I think I was also lucky with timing as well, because the market wasn't anywhere near as saturated as it is now. So yeah, that was kind of how I got off the ground.
And I mean, that's phenomenal. And this isn't, you know, it's a 3-year-old brand. So here we are in 2021, we're talking 2018. I mean, there's origin stories that we get from founders on this show, and they're talking about like 2014, 2013, like a long time ago kind of thing. Whereas actually 2018 in internet terms is fairly recent, right? Like this is after social ads got harder. It's after Instagram's been around for a long time. It's after Instagram influencers became aware of their worth. Like, you know, so it's actually, I imagine very reassuring that this stuff actually is still quite present and quite relevant. So Ava May, right now, how many followers are you sitting on Instagram?
Last time I checked, I think it's somewhere around 244,000, something like that.
Okay, but approximately 244,000. There you go. So, I mean, that's an impressive impressive whack. Now, that's something as well that a lot of brands out there perhaps struggle with. What is it that's engaging on Instagram? What is it that builds followers and following? What would you say to those people?
I think where lots of big brands struggle is the difference with social media, especially Instagram, is people want to see the people behind it, if that makes sense. So sometimes where you have these huge brands that you would expect to have a massive following and they don't, I think it's because they struggle to get past that barrier of showing who they are, you know, like a story behind that. You know, they've kind of so used to having this professional image with, I don't know, professional imagery and shots of maybe the product or whatever. Whereas on social media, I think what people have become accustomed to is actually getting to know real faces and real people. You know, that's certainly something that we've done. I mean, I remember really, really early days, one of the reasons I actually called it Ava May Aromas was because I didn't want it to be my name. I actually wanted to have a bit of anonymity to the brand. I wanted to kind of, I never intended to sort of put my face to it or whatever. And then, like I said, where I was looking at what other people were doing, and I noticed that the brands that showed the maker or their face seemed to get more engagement, seemed to be doing better. So I did a post one day where I think it's still on my grid way back, if you're not far enough. I did a post where I did, it was called Meet the Maker, like everyone was doing it. So I did a Meet the Maker post, and I was just so taken aback by the response that I got, the number of people that commented or messaged and said, oh, it's so nice to see the person behind this account, you know, see the person behind the brand. And that was the point where I went, oh, I think I'm going to get a lot further, a lot faster if I show who I am and show what I'm doing. So I started doing videos of me making things in the kitchen and carried that over to when we moved into the workshops, you know, so we show photos, videos of the machines and things being packed and really mundane stuff that, you know, I think on paper you'd go, why would anyone want to see the machine wrapping a wax melt or whatever? But people love it. They really enjoy it. They love seeing that story behind it. I think they connect with the brand on a totally different level of with real people. And even when it's not me that's being shown, you know, now that the brand's grown to the level that it is, we've carried on that behind the scenes content. And they love seeing the staff. They love seeing the staff members and the people that, I suppose in a way, the people that they support by ordering from us. It's like, I don't know if that's maybe a feel good factor of, you know, I'm helping employ people. And yeah, I think there's a real human element to it. And I think brands that have recognized that and done that really well, I just think their socials reflect that. It's not always the case. I mean, you have got some brands who are just huge, but that's certainly how I've found like growing has been a lot quicker. So yeah.
And so that results in sort of better engagement and better followings. What about being discovered from like a being discovered point of view? Like, is there anything you would add to that strategy if just from a sort of discovery, building initial traction and following?
I think I honestly feel like that part is so difficult, getting that traction and getting discovered. But I think, again, I think it helps with your relatability. I think where I was, I don't know this for a fact, but I would assume that where I was approaching influencers and stuff, again, if they, you know, if they get a message from you saying, hey, would you like to work with us? And then they come to your page and they can actually get a sense of who they're being proposed to work with, as opposed to just a page or a brand. I would imagine that maybe that helped. I know I remember one message in particular that I had back from a really big account, and she said something like, I don't normally agree to do these kinds of things, but I actually really like that you're showing your face and who you are, so I'll help you. So it got me in with that influencer, who then shared, you know, to her account, and she had, I think she had 50,000 followers, which at the time, you know, especially when you're a tiny account, it's like, that's great. That's exposure, isn't it? That's traction, and that's orders ultimately for your brand. So I just think it's so important. Like, do you know what I think proves that even more is the rise of TikTok. Like, TikTok's 100% the next thing. It's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And it doesn't necessarily mean that the other channels are going to disappear, but I'm a massive believer that that's where it's going. And I think to be on there, well, you've got to be into video, haven't you? And I think that's where so many brands are being forced to sort of try and keep up. And we've even found that transition hard, because we sort of, you know, we've always done a mixture of videos but photography as well, whereas TikTok is just purely video. That's where it's going. And it's like, Oh, it's scary. It's crazy how fast social media moves. And I think if you're not kind of constantly on it and picking up on what the trends are and what other people are doing, you get left behind, and that's really scary.
Nice. I personally do believe TikTok is a big one at the moment. I know there's a sort of a movement into the sort of from a performance side on the ads, and their ad platform is definitely improving, but also from the influencers on there, like there's a lot of brands, like for example Gymshark that got going on Instagram when Instagram was young, took advantage of influencers that had reach but didn't know their value. And I think we're seeing a sort of repeat of that on TikTok at the moment, with a lot of influencers with large followings that don't necessarily know that's valuable. They've created a massive following during lockdown whilst they've created drunk or not videos there from home or whatever, and actually now they have something of value, and also have developed a way of presenting and creating engaging videos with the tools that the TikTok app provides, and just practice, and I think that becomes valuable as well, because that kind of content that comes in from those TikTok influencers can then be leveraged on the other socials as content or reels or shorts. All of the platforms have some sort of version of like reels or basically TikTok now. I mean, even Netflix has it, right? Like on the Netflix app at the bottom on your phone, great. It has little quick laughs or whatever it's called. I think that becomes important, and then the repurposing of that content as well.
Yeah, that's a massive skill, repurposing content as well, like for efficiency or for anyone struggling with social media. I feel like if you can make one good video, then you can save yourself so much time, because you can literally apply it to all the other platforms, you know, stories, anything. It's, you know, and I think, again, people have this fear of, oh, should I be sharing this? Yes, you should, because who cares if someone's already seen it on Facebook? Like, they're not gonna message you and say, why have you posted this on here as well? So yeah, definitely the content, and content is hard to keep up with. That's something I've really struggled with at times, and finding ways to be efficient and clever with my time. And how I can build up a bank without constantly spending my life on my phone. That was something that I really, really struggled with. So yeah, I'm glad you said about repurposing content. I keep seeing courses about that, and I'm like, do you need to do courses to repurpose content? Just post it.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Maybe it's a classic example of sort of overthinking. I mean, different platforms have different sort of resolutions, different dimensions, different sort of top tricks for conquering that platform. But yeah, I mean, but again, I think Gary Vee he's pretty good, right? There aren't, you know, you're not going to go far wrong by sort of modeling his styles on the different different platforms and how he approaches them. So. In terms of, so nowadays, when you're collaborating with influencers and you're doing that reach out, what does that initial quid pro quo message look like now compared to how it did in back in the day, shall we say?
Oh God, it's so different now, then and now. It's evolved, obviously, like as has the brand. I've got a different understanding now. You know, you were saying about people understanding the value of what they're offering, because when I was messaging people initially, I was going, can I give you some free, you know, candles or samples to try in return for, I think, sharing my products on your page if you want to. Just so unaware of what I was offering. Whereas now it's much more structured, so it's, you know, we'll offer you, so in the first place, what we offer is based on the size of their following. So, you know, you're not necessarily going to offer the same deal to someone with, I don't know, 10,000 followers as you would 100,000, you know, because the value of what your brand is going to get in return is quite different. So we've kind of got a program, we've got a system in place where if an influencer is like under 10K, then we might offer them like a free product. And in return, we have a structured response of what we expect from them in return. So it's, you know, in return, we'd expect a story or a grid post or whatever that might be. For the larger followings, we've got a paid referral system in place. So we'll give them a code for their following. And in return, they then make a commission off of every sale where someone uses their code. So it's completely different now. It's much more structured. And yeah, like I said, it's based on the size of their following as to what they get offered. And it's made much clearer in the initial message. This is what we'll give you. This is what we expect in return. Yeah, I was so unaware at the time. I think I was scared to ask people for something back, weirdly. I almost didn't value my own brand and worth. Yeah, that's changed over time. But I think that's something that a lot of people do. They really undervalue their product and the fact that, you know what, you've worked really hard on that and it's taken you time and money. So don't be afraid to ask in return for an influencer to post about you. And, you know, I look back now at some of the things I gave away and I just can't believe I did it.
But you've learned that. And I think, would you say as well, it's helped now having a large, because you've got much larger following, like what you can sort of come at it with clout a little bit rather than like, laying down the law.
Yeah, massively. Like, I mean, God, when you start out, you know, and you've got 100 followers, even 1,000 followers, you know, you message so many accounts, you don't get a response. You just don't get a look in. And it does, unfortunately, it's a bit of a vanity thing, isn't it? But having a bigger number at the top of your page carries a bit of clout, I guess you could say. And I think, like I said, it's a vanity thing. So I think pages who might be smaller look at it and go, oh, you know, the opportunity to work with a bigger brand. So yeah, you do. You get more responses, you get more traction. It's easier, I'd say, to get in the door with bigger influencers. So yeah, it does help. But it's still not impossible. I think so many people are held back by not trying in the first place. Whereas in some ways, I look back at when we were smaller and I almost prefer it in the sense that I had more of an attitude of I've got nothing to lose and I would just go for it. Whereas now I'm much more cautious about who I approach and work with. And sometimes I feel like it actually holds me back. So it's a bit of a, you know, yin yang situation. So
where can people find out more about Ava May and about yourself and get in touch if they want to?
You can head over to the website, avamayaromas.com, obviously Instagram as well, same Instagram handle, just avamayaromas. If you want to get hold of me personally, always welcome to just email the team at Ava May and they just forward it on to me and I'll get in touch with anyone. I've had loads of people contact me through the website and I've had some really nice, connections through it. You know, people, whether it's asking for business help or personal things, anytime I'm happy to speak with anybody.
Nice. Okay, so avamayaromas.com or at avamayaromas across the socials. All right, so at this point in the interview, we like to mix it up. We change pace, we change gear, we go into the rapid fire question round. I ask the questions quickly. You can choose the speed in which you respond.
I was going to say, don't answer quickly.
Yeah, we just go into like high dub speed right now. Yeah. Are you up for that?
Yes, I am.
Are you two thumbs up for that?
Two thumbs
there
up.
There they are. All right. Okay. Question number one. If you ever had to start again, how would you make your money?
Oh my God. I'd do e-commerce again. I'd set up a store and I'd do dog products, which is what I want to do next. I'd set up an e-commerce store, do another WooCommerce site and I'd go into the dog space. I'm a big believer if you do something you love, then you'll just make it work. And dogs are my passion, which is why I want to go into that space next anyway. Either that or I would have gone to college and done what I really wanted to do, which was I always wanted to become a vet. I always wanted to be a vet. That was my dream as a kid. And I think I look back sometimes and think, oh, I wish I'd pursued that just on a personal level. So
You still could maybe, or you could maybe 80-20 it.
Maybe.
What's the most common or biggest mistake leaders make?
Not treating their staff with the respect that they should, or, you know, people that work for them, whatever you want to call it. My experience in the marketing agency that I referred to previously, like that was something that was huge for me, was just that common level of respect and how you talk to someone, and that famous quote, you know, you should talk to the janitor or cleaner in the same way you do a CEO. I think that level of respect and not treating someone, it doesn't matter what someone's job title or job role is, I just think that they love decency, and I think sometimes that gets forgotten, or they're better than other people and forget that, you know, at the end of the day your company wouldn't really be anything without having those people there. So, you know, talking to them in the right way is a big thing for me, and I think that gets forgotten a lot in the modern world.
Nice. Who is a great leader, whether alive or dead, and why?
Oh my God, his name has just gone out of my head, but I can picture him. Who's the guy? Oh, this is so embarrassing. What's his name? It's Simon. He's like one of my favourite people. He does all the TED Talks. What's his name?
Simon Sinek.
Yes, Simon Sinek. I absolutely love him. I can picture his face. I follow him on everything. And I was like, I've read his books. I was like, why has his name disappeared? Yes, Simon Sinek. I absolutely love him. He is one of my favourite people. I just think his approach to that human level is just amazing. I just love his ethos and how he does things. Another good leader who I aspire to, I've already said Gary Vee, I just absolutely love him. But again, I think the common thread is how they treat people. It's nothing necessarily special about, it's not necessarily about being really, really clever or academic or whatever. It's that how you treat people. And he actually says, doesn't he, the difference between a £5 million company and a £50 million company, it's the people. That's it. It's nothing special. So those just my ones.
How do you hire top talent?
I think it's about recognizing that you want them to work for you rather than trying to pitch yourself as, oh, we're amazing and you should come here and, you know, all these reasons. I think you've got to understand, you've got to attract them, you know, you've got to offer them something like an opportunity or whatever and make it. We had an interview recently for this marketing manager position, and you know what, we learned such a big lesson from it, where I just don't think we recognize that we need to give her the reasons to come to us, not vice versa, you know? So I think you've just got to be so open to new ways of working as well in the modern world. So like that flexibility, if you want top talent, you've got to kind of flex and meet their needs as well. Working from home, remote working, all this is all new, isn't it, in this day and age. And that was something that my dad was kind of like, well, my generation didn't work from home. And I was like, I know, but if we want to attract people at a higher level, we've got to move with the times. And that's something that we have to offer. So yeah, flexibility, I'd say.
Nice. I think A players, first off, A players will always be, you'll be poaching them. They'll always be working for someone else, right? Or doing something else. That's one thing, right? So you're always going to be poaching them. They do have choice. And then, yeah, the A players as well. They it's not going to be just a job. They're gonna want to know how they can make a difference and how it aligns with where they want to be in the future. And I think it's called golden handcuffs, but it's sort of less sinister than that. But it's about aligning their role at the company with what they're trying to achieve ultimately, I think, and so they feel they're growing.
Their personal growth, yeah, definitely. They have to see it as, this will align with where I want to go, definitely.
What is one of your proudest moments?
In a business sense, I'm really, really proud of hitting £1 million in year one. That was just a massive thing. Like, that's a figure that I never set out for it to be such a big thing. And I don't know, for me, that was something that shifted and I went, oh wow, we've actually created something that's a proper business, if you like. So that was really, really special for me. That really changed my mindset towards the business, to be honest. And then on a personal level, meeting some of the people that I've met through Instagram, like in real life, I was fortunate enough to meet a little girl in Scotland who has really severe cerebral palsy, and she's just a big fan of the whole, you know, lots of people from Instagram, and I got to go and meet her. And that, just on a personal level, was just really fulfilling. It was just like to be able to make a difference to somebody just because they like you and they wanted to give you a hug and whatever. And so there's kind of two things there, like one business, one personal.
Nice. What's one interesting fact about you that not many people would know?
I'm not that interesting. I'm really into running, and I completed a half marathon last year. And like, people think that I'm not into fitness at all because I literally don't go to the gym or anything. And then every now and then I'll be like, right, I'm entering this race, and I'll just go and do it and prove everybody wrong.
So how do you build up the fitness to be able to run a half marathon without going to the gym?
I don't know. I don't actually. like literally a couple of weeks before, I'll be like, right, I need to go for some runs. I need to do something. I just wing it. That's my approach to life. I just wing it. See how it goes.
What daily routines do you have, whether morning or evening, that have helped make you successful?
I get up early every morning. I hate wasting a morning, so I always get up at about 7 and always take the dog for a walk first thing before I do anything. So I literally just chuck on clothes, like, you know, proper rough clothes. Don't eat or have tea or anything. I just go straight out for a walk. And as crazy as that sounds, especially since starting the business, I find that really helps me clear my head and sets me up for the day. So yeah, walk the dogs every morning quite early, rain or shine. And then I always clear my emails first thing. Like, I love to just clear my inbox, that's done. And then anything else that I need to do, I just crack on with. But they're my two sort of morning things that I always, always do.
Nice. And any evening things?
More chilled in the evening. Like, I like to get to the gym if I can. Like, again, I think mentally it just helps you clear your mind so much. Or I'll take the dogs out for another walk. And I love to chill out and watch a bit of Netflix and whatever, and scroll on socials. I just do all those things that, you know, everyone likes to do to switch off, really. It's probably not switching off really, though, because I'm always on the Ava May social accounts, like scrolling and checking things. But I like to chill out. I like my free time.
Nice. What book or books changed your mindset or life?
There is one called, it's one by Daniel Priestley, which was one of the first ones that I ever, like, business inspired books that I ever read, called Oversubscribed, which I was just really, it just really got me thinking about. We were talking about brands before we started this recording, and it's all about, you know, why is it that some restaurants have waiting lists that are months and months and months, you know, and why is, I don't know, some hairdressers, and, you know, why is that? Why do some people have people queuing up for them and then others are, you know, haven't got any? And it just really got me into that mindset of, yeah, it really is the power of the brand. It's all about the brand and what you offer and your story. And so that one was a good one for me. Another one, Simon Sinek, Leaders Eat Last. I really, really like that. I've got all his books, Gary Vee's, all his social media books. But yeah, that's probably the one that I remember the most. The one that had the most impact was Oversubscribed. It's a bit of a random one, but it's really good.
Nice. What's the most exciting question you spend your time thinking about?
Most exciting question? Do you know what? With all the changes that I've had in the last year, something that keeps going through my mind is where will we be? Where will I be on a personal level and as a business in 5 years' time? Like, I know people ask that a lot, and it's never really been something that I've considered. But I think with how much the world has changed, COVID, and then all the things that have happened to me in the last year, I'm like, it's just made me realise how much things can just change in a split second. So I keep thinking to myself a lot, where will I be in 5 years' time? Probably also because of my age. And so in 5 years, I'll be sort of turning 30, and I'm quite like, ooh. So yeah, where will we be? And I just don't know. And I think that's what's striking me a lot, is I've got no idea where I'm going to be. I know where I'd like to be and sort of have an idea of it. But and it's an exciting question as well, I think.
I think it's an exciting question. I think then exploring that further and digging in and getting real clarity over where you want to be, and beginning to visualize it. I think it's crazy the power that has. You begin to spot opportunities that are aligned with where you want to be that otherwise you might not have spotted. Yeah. I think that's really the power of The Secret and what it's talking about. It's just
that. You're sounding like The Secret. That's another book that I've read. And again, I was never really one for visualization as such, but I've really come around to that in the last year or so, you know, and I've started to, I do believe there is a power to, you know, if you really, really want something, you think about it and you plan your path on how you're going to get there, then there's nothing really stopping you. So,
absolutely. What unusual or underrated food or drink should more people try out?
I don't know if it's underrated, but sushi is like my new favorite thing. I'm absolutely obsessed with it. I hated it for years and years and years, and got dragged to a restaurant like a couple of weeks ago, and I've completely changed my mindset on it. So now I'm all about the sushi, and I can't find it anywhere around here in Yorkshire. It's all pubs and traditional food. So the power of raw fish.
Are you going to start making it from home, or?
No, I'm not that. I'm just not that good in the kitchen, to be honest with you. I'm a bit useless. So I have no culinary skills, but I appreciate good food when I eat it. when it's made for me.
When it's made for you. Yeah, no, definitely. Actually, our local supermarket actually has like a sushi stand in it, which was a new thing to me. I was like, wow, that's pretty cool.
I probably need to explore a bit further and try and find it. But yeah,
I mean, like chefs making it there and there.
Literally there again.
Yeah, I don't mean they sell sushi like you know, yeah, like some garage or something. No, I mean they actually make it there and there. And
I've not seen that. And Yorkshire needs to catch up with that game.
Yeah, I know. Norfolk, a lot of people are surprised that we've got electricity, but actually, it's pretty good. It's pretty good here, folks. All right, last question, and probably the most important one. Hannah, what makes you happiest?
What makes me happiest? Do you know, I've had so much time to reflect on this over the last year. And for me, it's who I'm with. It's my family. It's made me realise that that is more important than anything else. You know, if you'd asked me a couple of years ago, I probably would have said, oh, the concept of, you know, running my own business and you know, having lots of money. And as much as those things are lovely, I think COVID over the last like 2 years really now, and certainly this year for me, losing a couple of family members has just made me realize how precious life is and how short life is. You know, my uncle passed recently and he was 62, you know, and had a heart attack really suddenly. And you know, and I think it's just the finale, as stupid as it sounds, like the finality of that and saying, you know, if you have your funeral, you say goodbye. And it just made me go, gosh, you know, if that's me, then I've got about another 30 years. Like, it just makes you realize how precious life is. And it sounds so corny, but you really, like, tomorrow isn't promised. You really don't know if you're going to have it. And it's just made me go, you know, and losing my grandma as well and earlier in the year. And it's just really made me reassess and realize that, you know what, my family really are what make me happy. You could strip away everything, and if I had them, I'd be okay. So yeah, as corny as that answer is, it really is for me. It's just the last 2 years have really, really made me reflect on that. It's not material things. And I've been very fortunate over the last couple of years to acquire material things I thought would make me happy. So for example, I was able to buy a car like a few months ago that I'd really wanted for years, and it was my first big purchase that I would call like a success purchase, maybe something that I was able to do because of my business, because you know I've you know done okay. And actually, do you know what, that this sort of change in thinking has really made me go, do you know what, it's lovely, but it doesn't make me happy, not inside. So
well, I think that's a fantastically authentic answer to cap off an authentic episode. And I think authenticity is a theme that's sort of been going through the with the showing the behind the scenes of the Instagram, with the like the rough and ready getting started, figuring it out, selling before even having an actual business registered and so on. It's just that rough and ready, just getting your hands dirty, diving in and sort of figuring it out once you're there type attitude, getting that initial momentum going, which is so important with anything, like from a to-do list item that you don't want to do on a daily basis through to the dreams and the hopes, the goals, as you said, like actually really you're the only person who would be holding yourself back at any time. And I think it's this interview has served as a wonderful reminder of that. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your authenticity with us and the audience today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've really enjoyed it. And I hope, you know, even if it inspires just one person to have a go at something or get started, even if you don't know exactly what you're doing, I think that attitude of, you know, just giving it a go and seeing what happens is, it's all anyone needs, and anyone can do it. If I can do it, anyone can do it.
Hey there, you incredibly good-looking human. Thanks so much for listening. If you had a good time today and would like more good times in the future, please hit that subscribe button and leave a heartwarming review. I read them all, and it will go a long way to help others out there benefit from all the teachings of this show. And if you want to get in touch or otherwise learn more about me, head to martincook.co.uk or smarterdestiny.com. I really appreciate you. You're an incredible human. Until next time, keep crushing.